Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Hello, Hawkbait, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. This is Matt Weber on the board. S&P Futures, we have them. Where are we? We are down 7. And we are, Dow Futures are actually unchanged. NASDAQ Futures down 47. So came up a little bit yesterday's rally, but not very much. It was a big rally. We got all up a little bit. Brendan, how are you? Brendan, is Brendan here? He was.
Should be. Let me put him back up.
We don't know where he is. But we had, anyway, a huge rally yesterday, just a review for those who might have been under a rock someplace. Dow was up. Brendan, you are back? Not exactly. You are here?
I am here.
All right. We're just saying yesterday Dow was up 465, S&P's up 60, NASDAQ up 257 as we... Here's what I think the solution is for us all being wealthy behind the dreams of avarice. No new stimulus plan. Just every single day, Munchkin and Pelosi talk about it, and it's on its way.
It's just like the health care plan,
yeah.
Which is going to be released in two weeks. It's going to be like tax returns, which are going to be released in 2 weeks. The more things are out in the future, 2 weeks from now, everything is going to be so fantastic.
Well, you know what they say, tomorrow is a day away, right, Annie?
Tomorrow's a day away, Annie.
Yeah, it's always a day away.
And yet, tomorrow never gets here.
That's right. It never gets here. So the what a world we're in. Now we have Joe Biden take a slice at being your mother. Brendan, you deserve that cold because you didn't wear a sweater like I told you to.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You should tell me that all the time.
Yeah, well, it's I remember once I read where, you know, everybody was how you're supposed. When we were kids, Maddie. Of course, everybody was all over if you let yourself get cold, if you do this, you do that. Then finally, somebody did some scientific study, something about if they poured cold germs into you, it didn't matter for the next 2 days whether you were chilly and wet or warm and dry. It didn't matter. You had a cold. You know, it's a
yeah. Well, you couldn't go out without a hat.
Oh yeah,
you sure could not go out after you took a bath or a shower if your hair was.
Oh no. And
those two things, I think those two things would give you pneumonia.
Well, and God help you if you like went and played handball and didn't go shower up and make sure you were dry and everything. You just like walked right outside into your car.
Mm-hmm.
That was
yep.
You might as well get that was a kiss of death, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's obvious that you and I never did any of those things.
No, God, no, no. It's a like. Okay, and the weird part is I was on, not the weird part. Maybe it was the weird part. I was invited on Joan Esposito's show, and we're talking about the COVID, and she's like, well, you don't really like them people, like, telling you what to do or something. I said, well, you know, Joan, when I was younger, I actually used to run a little bit, Brendan, not like you, but one thing I really thought was special, and you could do it maybe once or twice a year. I lived at 70 West Huron, is if you ever had a night where it was totally calm and like 0 to 5 below, somewhere in that range, say 0 or 5 below to 5 above, and it was pretty calm, if you went and ran in the park at night, it was really pretty special.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because you had a sky that was usually unreal, as calm as all get out, quiet as could be, and you know, you're smart enough to. What little wind there was, you parked at one end and ran into the wind you know, whatever wind there was. Hopefully there wasn't much. When you turn around, if you did, I used to do like 4 miles, not like you. So if you did it right, that was about a half hour. And just as everything, when you were sweating through like your last layer, you were done and you piled in your car and you were good to go. But it was about as nice a release that you, I mean, I thought that was really something. Now, I know I'm nuts by doing that, but.
I don't think you're nuts.
Well, but yeah, you're especially nuts because you like to run even more. So as I mentioned to Joan, I said if I call home to Mom, she's going to say you're going to do what? Well, that's what moms do, you know. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling that if I turn on the TV and if it's cold enough to where the city's had, you know, cold emergency, they might say if you croak it or if you break your ankle and you call 911. They're busy doing other stuff. By the time they get there, you might be solid on the side of the path. I get all that. Give me all the warnings you want. Just don't tell me I can't go. I mean, am I right or not? I mean, that's my version of America. I mean, with the COVID, I absolutely will take precautions for other people, for for myself because I'm not 25 anymore. I said, but the idea that I have to act so you feel comfortable, that sounds to me so much like the Patriot Act. Dr. J and I were doing we were on the score, for God's sake, years ago. That Patriot Act went through. I'm saying, John, there's stuff in here. Before people even realize, there's going to come a time people don't even know what this act was for. And yet these rights and stuff and the cameras and all this kind of crap is still going to be here. And he's like, I'm with you. And here it is, how many years later, how many people remember what the Patriot Act was for? Yet there's cameras up behind wherever you go. There's all kinds of stuff. There's people looking at you everywhere. It's, you know, people are looking at all your stuff online. It's pretty scary. And, and now the idea that you have to act in a way where we make other people feel good. That's a slippery slope, boy. That's a slippery slope. And, anyway, we had our compliance meeting last night. And I don't want to give anybody any ideas, but.
And are you in compliance?
We are, but it makes you wonder why the hell you're in this business. Anybody who thinks that there isn't some sort of a motive behind your government really needs to pop your head out of the sand, Mr. Ostrich, Mr. and Mrs. Ostrich. They are essentially putting any broker who wants to talk to anybody out of business, the Schwabs and the Fidelities and people. They just want your money. They want you to charge you 1.5% to just put you in the market, do nothing, and if the market goes down, it's the president's fault. They don't want anybody talking to anybody. Now, the latest is any conversation with anybody who's a client or who might be a client is considered a recommendation. So if you were to say, geez, what?
Any conversation?
Well, if you were to say something like, what do you think of IBM? I don't know. Looks okay here. If somebody has it and doesn't sell it, and a year later it's 50% down, they can say, you told me not to sell it. It doesn't even matter whether you have a transaction out of it or not. No.
That doesn't make sense to me.
No, it doesn't. That's what I'm saying. Exactly what I'm saying. That's what these new rules could be. You could actually go out on that limb, and I hope people don't, but it's absolutely insane.
That does not make very much sense to me because when I go to you think of Maddie. Maddie comes to you with his $50 million portfolio and just looks for general advice and just is not looking necessarily, but before he puts the money with you, he wants to know that you're as good as he thinks you are. And so you just tell him a general overview without making any specific recommendations. Then of course Maggie's going to give you the $50 million.
Not making recommendations is the same as a recommendation according to this rule.
That's nonsensical.
Yes, it is. These are people we're paying to do stuff, Brendan. What are we paying them to do? And now does anybody really care? I mean, I guess, male or female. If you're in a big time law firm and you're working on Saturday night as a stripper, I guess your firm might care about that so much. Mm-hmm. Now, as to why the government would care about it, I have no idea. But the incredible thing now with the NASD or the FINRA or with SEC is outside business for brokers. Why do they give a rat's ass if I'm painting a house on a weekend, which I don't, by the way? So the point now where they're checking people every year now, they're checking everybody's credit report and other stuff to try and trip them up. Because you have about six different forms to fill out. If you say you're painting houses on one form and not another, oh, God. Oh, God. Not only have you filed false information, there's a failure to supervise the firm. There's probably three fines in there. Brennan, who gives a rat's behind?
Well, there is a rationale behind that. I'm not defending it, but it's still... of course, every time I say I'm not defending it, I'm going to defend it.
Yeah.
But let me explain it. But the reason for that is to make sure that you're not compromised, because you're governments do this all the time. They want to avoid outside conflicts of interest. And this came about more recently because so many politicians had conflicts, like you see a Martin Sandoval, or, God forbid, somebody like Mike Madigan and Eddie Burke, who, by the way, usually clear these things and also write the rules.
Well, okay, but
in a situation like that, I mean, their legislators voting on tax levies in the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois,
right, well, okay,
and yet their business is property tax adjustment.
Okay, well, those people, that's considered a part-time job, as you well know. Illinois is the champion of part-time jobs. But they're not into Michael Madigan's sphincter enough to where they will trip him up on four different pieces of paperwork that make no difference. They actually want to find out, and they can't do it. By the way, they haven't put any of these people in jail. Really, they can't really tell you. I could tell you more about his conflicts than they can.
Mm-hmm.
And so could you, right?
Yeah.
But they can't go after him. So the energy is all driven towards people like me.
Yes, because it makes it seem like the powers that be are doing something to stop the really bad actors from acting badly. But in a case like City of Chicago and in the state of Illinois, many of the people who are acting badly or are on the fringes of acting badly are the ones writing the rules.
By the way,
have control and power.
By the way, I'm extremely impressed that you put me in the same sentence as Madigan.
Hey, you're a Southside guy. You know, I just kind of think power broker in the city, well known around the state.
So you think that I'm doing
quiet?
I'm one of three firms or one of three people that is able to have receivables pushed over to him by the state? I wish I had that kind of power. I don't. But Brennan, when I started on the trading floor, it was a different world. There were three Moncheck Webers. Talk about a blast in the past. Computers. Up in the office. So when you were doing your neutral spreading, which is what I did and still do some for my clients, you had to write down on a piece of paper what the deltas were and so forth and where the stock was. So when you went to the floor and the stock moved, there wasn't another computer to tell you, here's your new prices. You had to calculate them by hand. And I mean by hand because you couldn't have you could not have a calculator on a trading floor. It was an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you had to do it by hand. So every position... you would sit there and go, you had to realize that if you're buying three, selling two, it's called a ratio backspread, okay? Where generally, if the stock is 60, if the stock's at 100, you'd certainly do it at those prices because you got a huge winner, right? So you had to constantly ask yourself on a big move, if the stock goes from 100 to 400, do I want this spread or don't I? So you would take everything to the extreme, which is how you judge stuff. Well, is that art has totally been lost? Because they're all over brokers. They somehow have been sold by the Merrill Lynch's of the world that if I take your money, throw it in a bunch of stocks, charge you 1.5%, and play golf for the whole year and don't do anything, that somehow that's a fiduciary responsibility. I can do nothing. But if I have recommendations for you or I do it on a commission basis and I come up to the same 1.5% total commissions on the year, but now I've made, 50 trades, which means I'm working my fanny off. That's bad. Because if I do a trade, but if you take it to the extreme, the entire society would fall apart. I ask yourself, why the hell did the chief guy say something stupid like that? It's because you couldn't go to a dentist like you do now, Brendan. If you walked in and said, I have a sore tooth, the dentist would say, wow, you got a bad cavity in there. here's a prescription. Give me $500 for my consultation, and go get your tooth fixed. And you'd say, well, why can't I? You can't fix my tooth. You're the dentist. Oh no, I can't. If I fix your tooth, I'm going to be accused of telling you need it fixed only because I'm fixing it, because I get money for, quote, the transaction. So you got to go somewhere else, and I'll give you a prescription. You walk in the door and say, I want my tooth fixed, and then you pay that guy. Well, that to most people is insane. So every time that you look at a broker, if he says you should buy IBM and he gets paid for you to execute, he's doing you a disservice. He's only doing it for himself. Yet, if you walk into a tire place, the guy goes, you got a nail on your tire, well, sell me a new tire. Okay, you couldn't do that either. You'd have to say, oh, no, I'm charging you $100 for telling you you got a nail on a tire, and I'm going to write out this prescription that says go get a tire. I mean, when you have that level of zero trust, I mean, the entire world has decided you can't trust commission brokers, but we've decided you can trust money managers that take money and don't do anything and you know, could care less, maybe don't even look at your account, that somehow that's better, that 1.5% is better than the 1.5% the other guy's charging a commission when he's actually making a trade a week and doing something. But that's what our people have been led to believe, because they're 35-year-old idiots and being driven around by Schwab and Fidelity. And they're constantly being pushed. Merrill Lynch started this in 1978. Accumulate assets, don't let people trade on their own and just get paid for holding them. And how well have they done with that over 60 years? I mean, they just keep pushing and keep pushing, and the government just keeps giving. And all of a sudden, I mean, you would never start the business I'm in. I'm in it because I like my clients, but I mean, I'm listening to this thing yesterday, I'm going, would I start this tomorrow? What manner of moron would? I mean, it's insane. I mean, this is where we're heading with this COVID stuff. I was telling Maddie, we have a couple of people that listen to us from Manchester, England, of all places, and the lady writes me a few weeks ago that they're now banned from going to see their family. Now, her husband works in a hospital. He brings it home. He had it, she had it. They both got antibodies. They can't go out. They're locked in. They can't go see their family. Brendan, are we out of our mind? I mean, these are people. I mean, why are they can't go out because somebody else doesn't feel safe when they're perfectly fine to do this? I mean, what are we doing here? Are we going to take the whole place down because people don't feel safe?
Well, this is a recurring argument that you raised over the last several weeks, and it does come down to a question of how you view health and safety and health and safety of others, and putting people at risk, whether you wear a mask or not wear a mask, whether you are contagious or not. I agree with you that once you've got the antibodies because you've been sick and you've passed through the sick zone and you're recovered, that makes the argument a lot less viable, because you presumably are immune and are no longer contagious. I understand that. So, I've said many times on the show that we were taught something in law school, and that is that bad facts make bad laws. And when you're overreacting to something, and, you know, fear is part of this, when you overreact, then you make bad laws or bad decisions or bad rules. That's compounded when people aren't being empathetic or caring for their fellow citizens, which I think is one of the big issues that we have in our country right now, is the polarization, and things like lack of empathy is being highlighted and polarizing.
Well, I think it is as well. If I put up on a blackboard, we have a lot of people on the show that, you know, are on one side or the other in this argument, obviously. Carl being the guy who is convinced that the masks don't even work at all. and he has some stuff to prove it in his mind. But I guess at one point I have to ask myself, what are we hoping to have happen? I mean, if we had 300 million mountains where everybody could run up the mountain and sit there for a month, somehow or another somebody would stock food on the mountains like the water and wafers back when, fallout shelters, and we all come back down with the expectation that this bug is gone, okay, just totally gone. It just couldn't find any bodies, and it just said, we'll kill ourselves or something, or we had a big infrared rainstorm or something, and they're all dead. I mean, do we really expect that to happen? When what are we expecting? We lock people up for 3 weeks and we let them out. Do we think the thing's gone or not? If it's not gone, all you did was shove people in for 3 weeks and brought them back out. Now they got it. Now they're going to get it 3 weeks now. I mean, what are we? I mean, what people now are telling me is we're going to keep it down to a dull roar and make sure I don't get it until a viable vaccine comes out that all the other people take and I won't take, and then I'm okay. I mean, I guess I don't understand the end game, Brendan. I really don't.
I think the end game is that this is a virulent virus. It's unknown right now, so the effects and all the stoppages of it are unknown to a certain extent. We're getting better. We're getting better in treatment, which is why you're seeing the death rate drop down considerably from where it was earlier in the year, both here and around the world. The percentage of people who contracted and need hospitalization and who die are dropping. And that's, I think, in part because treatment is better, the therapeutics are getting better, but there's still a lot of unknowns out there. And to your argument before, your statement before, you know, if somebody had tuberculosis and went out as they would, as they wanted to, because I'm in deal with this. My choice is that I know I have tuberculosis, I can deal with this, and goes into a crowded theater and just starts coughing up a lung during a movie and potentially infecting everybody around them. That's behavior that should be limited. When you've got a disease that is spread through the air and doesn't know how contagious it really is right now, the idea is to limit the exposure of others so that when you have contracted COVID, if you know that window is a 10-day or 2-week period when you are still both ill or possibly ill and can spread the disease, the idea is to limit that exposure.
Well, I would agree with that.
In order to protect the other people around you.
I would agree with that. Boy, if I had it, I wouldn't come out and get anybody else. I agree with
and,
that.
Well, that. A lot of people are doing that. A lot of people have put themselves into a position where...
Well, a lot of people don't know they have it.
That's right. But their behavior is acting in such a way that they're in situations where it's likely that they were exposed. And once they're exposed, they've got two options. One is to just ignore it, or two is to take a cautious approach so that they don't spread it or don't get sicker themselves.
Well,
I had a friend who was up in Colorado, and he's over 70 years old, and he was out skiing at a time when the Denver area and that ski resort was a hot spot. This is back in March, and he couldn't get tested at that point when he came back here, even though he'd been exposed to people in the area. So here's a guy over 70 years old who had been in a hot spot. And he decided to quarantine. His doctor said, I recommend that you quarantine. So he did. For 2 weeks, he stayed home. That was out of an abundance of caution, but also to protect those around him, his family and friends. At that time, he didn't have to. It was just recommended. He wasn't forced to quarantine. But he did. And he did that so that he wouldn't infect potentially others around him or even get sicker himself. There's less of that right now where people are putting themselves in a situation where they know that there's a higher probability, a higher likelihood that they could contract the disease because of the number of people who are around there and because of the lack of protective measures that are being taken, where their risk goes up exponentially.
But there's a cost to this. Look at the economy.
There's a cost to that.
Look at the economy. Look at the mental health. Look at the stuff that's going down. And I'll tell you what, you are way better off. For somebody who's in the, and I know somebody's going to tweet something in, I know a guy who was 28 years old in Outer Mongolia that died. Okay, fine. I get that. People die all the time. One of these days it's going to be me, you know, and everybody else on this show. But the point being is we're starting to see issues of mental health. We're starting to see, you know, all kinds of problems in families. You don't shut people up for 4 or 5 months and now the young people, we have somebody on the show, we'll go nameless, was in a fraternity in college. The people in fraternity intentionally exposed themselves to it so they could sell their antibodies at $400 a pop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the young people are not even sick, Brendan. Most of them. I mean, almost all of them. I mean, we're going crazy. I mean, I'm saying there are costs that come up the other side. And what I don't want to see, and then we'll talk about the market more, what I don't want to see is what I am seeing is a certain class of people saying, keep people away from me. I'm staying home, but I want everybody delivering stuff to me. All the rest of you people have to work, keep working. There's no appreciation for those that have to work. And how many, there's 40% of the, 50% of the economy right now is working. Because if they don't go to work, they don't get paid. Yet other people think they should stay home and still get paid. That's the trick bag in this thing that I have a real problem with.
There are multiple layers to this, but you know, I think one of the reasons we're at a very serious crossroads right now is the fact that the treatment levels, therapeutics, are evolving right now. We know more about how to treat, and you look at the hospitalizations going down, and you look at the death rate going down from where it was several months ago. And we're not keeping up with the transition in the way that the government or the economy opens back up. And that's because of fear base and because of the denial that the disease existed. And I think that comes in large part from the administration denying in public that it exists. And I have no idea what's going to happen over the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks with Trump's diagnosis. Now he's going back to the hospital. But the idea that the disease doesn't exist, that forget about this, but don't open your lives again.
Not even Trump ever said it didn't exist. Not even he ever said it didn't exist.
He said it was a hoax.
Well,
he said it was a hoax.
Yeah, there's tape of that.
Well,
yeah,
okay.
Multiple times he said it's a hoax, but this is the Democrats' way to get me out of office.
Okay, well, but
those were words that he said.
The man's a blithering. You know,
and yet he told Bob Woodward that it was a severe thing that people get this and die. It was a direct contradiction of what he said in public.
All right, the one thing the man did properly, the one thing, was to shut off the flights to China when the businesses didn't do it. And the one person in this country who said that was a bad idea is the buffoon running against him, Joe Biden.
And I will grant you that limiting, he did not ban, he limited the flights to and from China early on.
Right.
But that was just taking the faucet and turning it a half a turn.
I don't
disagree. Turning it all the way off.
But explain to me why the businesses that were sending people back and forth, why didn't they do that? They do that themselves. How immoral are those people?
I agree. They should have been shut down a lot earlier.
By the way, real quick question. I might have to have you back this week. I want to talk about this. I sent it to you last night. I want to talk about this Apple starting. They're coming out with a new earplug or something. So they're taking all the competitors' earplugs off their site. How do you not go in and put handcuffs on this guy this morning and get him for the Clayton Act?
I cannot explain that to you.
Well, we might have to have you on maybe this week when we have another attorney for a second, and we'll talk about antitrust, because that's the most blatant thing I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, and there are a lot of examples that we can find, in this administration and in previous administrations on both parties.
All the way back to Ronald Reagan.
All the way back to Ronald Reagan, yeah.
All right, bud, take care of yourself. S&P futures down 50, NASDAQ futures down 50 cents. We were up 60 yesterday, 60 points. Now we're down 50 cents. NASDAQ futures down 22. Back, Mr. Joel on Cannon.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, thanks, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Matt Weber. Man, you know, I'm sitting there reading an article about teen spending and COVID stuff, and I used to be able to ask what teens are doing from you. I can't do that anymore.
I wouldn't know.
No, you wouldn't know. You may have to have, like, pop out a couple of kids, and then 15 years you could tell me type of thing. Anyway, S&P futures up 25 cents, 25 cents. NASDAQ futures down 20. Dow futures up 18. A quiet day after a big rally yesterday. As we keep having we're going to get our stimulus just one more day. DAX up 20 points, 0.1%. Boy, Europe's very, very quiet. FTSE up 2, it's flat. CAC around up 16.3%. Over in Asia, playing a little catch up, at least in the Nikkei, up 121.5%. Shanghai's still not open. They were open, their last day open was 9:30, which had been last week. Hang Seng up, 212, 0.9%. Not sure exactly why China's closed, but they are. Again, review of yesterday, Dow Jones up 465, that's 1.7%. S&P's up 60, 1.8%. NASDAQ up 257, 2.3%. Big day in the NASDAQ. Bonds were up to 0.77, so we're up from 0.64 really a week ago, so that's a pretty reasonable move. I mean, it's only, you know, whatever, not very much, still under 1%, but still, it's, you know, in terms of percentage, it's a pretty good move. The Bund minus 0.51, Japan positive 0.02, so not much going on there. Oil up 56 cents, still can't quite make it back to 40, 39.78, but trying. Brent up 58 cents, 41.87. Natural gas up another 5 cents, 2.67. I wonder if that's this little, people had to turn the heat on a little earlier, maybe. Might be. RBOB up 2%, 121. We've got gold unchanged at 1920. Silver down 4 cents. They both had a decent rally yesterday. Copper 296. Still can't make it over $3, but trying. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have one issue in the area. It's on the south side. The Sibley Boulevard entrance ramp to the Bishop Ford is closed due to road construction. That's scheduled to be picked up on westbound Sibley around 7 a.m. this morning. So another 25 minutes or so keep that in mind, that's to get on the Bishop Ford. No other issues to report. We do have some delays on the inbound Ryan as you're approaching the circle, but no accidents to report. I-57 and the Stevenson are all quiet, as is the Eisenhower. Northside expressways have been quiet all morning. Suburbs looking good, too. So a nice, quiet commute if you're heading in this morning. Weather today, we're going to warm up into the 70s. Could have a chance of some isolated showers later on, but should be a pleasant day with a high of 73. Right now, it's crystal clear and 51 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 104 today. Right now, it's clear and 70. In sports, it was a Monday Night Football doubleheader last night as the Kansas City-New England game was postponed by a day. Patriots played the Chiefs tough through about three quarters, and then Kansas City blew away late with Cam Newton out of the game and beat the Patriots 26-10. And then the nightcap, it was Green Bay all over Atlanta, 30-16. Cheap.
All right, let me get this straight. Joel, how are you? The Bears were given the second game, the CBS game, right?
Yeah, because they moved the Patriots game out.
Right, not only was the game so lousy that in the third and fourth quarter they weren't even going to commercial after punts. So then they felt they had to reward CBS with another game on Monday night to make up for the Bears or what?
Yeah, the Chiefs-Patriots game is going to be a highly rated game, and so CBS got to keep it and moved it to Monday, and so CBS broadcast it, and it was Jim Nance and Tony Romo, their Sunday afternoon A-team.
So they did not believe that the Bears were a fair trade.
Apparently not.
I'd say they were right on that one. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Keith. How you doing on this Tuesday morning? Did Matty Ice say something about 70 degrees?
73 today.
Wow.
And be in the upper 60s and low 70s for the next week or so.
That's what I want to hear. Maybe get those sticks out one more time.
Turn the heat off.
You turn the heat off and get the sticks out as many times as possible. You got in the next 2 to 3 weeks, I would say.
The only thing about playing this time of the year is make sure.
A little bit more of that this year than ever. But how are you guys doing this morning? What are you looking at, Chief?
I'm looking at if you play golf in the fall, you want to keep it in the fairway because all the leaves are in the rough.
You're right about that.
Well, I don't. Yeah, I always keep the ball in the fairway when I play. When I'm on number one, I put it in the number two fairway. When I'm on two, I put it on the number three fairway. So I'm in the fairway quite a bit. On the wrong hole.
But you can't even use the foot mashy if you can't find it. Maddie, what's a foot mashy?
I don't even know if I know what that is.
Well, they used to call clubs all had a name. It was a driver. The three wood was the spoon. Was the four the mashy?
Okay, so a four wood.
Yeah, well, but the foot mashy is when you kick it back in the fairway.
Oh. Kick it out from behind the tree.
Yes, that's a foot mashy.
You can only do that in the fall when there's leaves.
Yeah, just
the
you blame
fall
it on the leaves.
Rules are a little bit different than the summer rules.
Yes, at least when we play, it's like, oh, geez, that tree shouldn't be here. They meant to plant it over here. I'll just move the ball, you know.
You just got to go right through the trees, Chief. You got to find a couple limbs and just blast right through them. No sense going around them.
The first time I caddied, I think the guy said to me, you know, son, 70% of the tree is there, or something along those lines. I'm like, yeah, right. Anyway, Joel, we've got a big rally yesterday. It seems like as long as we keep the Greyhounds going after the rabbit's a stimulus package. As long as we never catch the rabbit, we keep going up.
Yeah, I think more yesterday was, you know, the Trump health rally, if anything. The way the market reacted Thursday night and Friday a little bit, I think it was pretty much predicated on, his health condition was. It seemed to be improving. He's back at the White House. So I think that was the driver yesterday more than anything else. We'll see what kind of follow through. I thought we were going to be in a little bit more of a trading range to the election. So today will be important whether or not, you know, we bust through yesterday's high at 3,400 and make our way into the 3,400 handle or just fall back into a trading range. But it's been, until yesterday was pretty much a nice trend day. It's been pretty choppy and back and forth. But today will be important if they can add to yesterday's gains.
It's interesting that if we pop through a stimulus package, wherever the number is, say cut it in the middle, say it's $1.6 trillion. $1.6 trillion is roughly 1 year's income tax revenue for the government, right? So, I mean, if we do that in a calendar year, we'll have spent essentially four income tax revenue years. And yet, when we listen, and again, this is not, you know, that's not about all politics, but when you have two people that are running for president, and the, you know, and I'll use the term buffoons on TV keep talking about how, gee, the Democrats are are going to raise taxes. Does anybody see any way that that the Republicans aren't grabbing for revenue as well? How can it possibly be when we spent 4 years revenue in 1 year?
I think another thing that the market told you, whatever your political standing is that if Trump wins, the market's going to go up. If Biden wins, the market's going to go up. So I think that that's the cue that I think that I got from the market yesterday.
Okay, well, let me ask you this: and again, depending on your feelings that how much of the market move in the last year has been essentially money driven, I would say that. I don't know. I mean, I won't say 100% chance, but I'll go with a 75-80 that whatever the stimulus package is, it's it. There's not going to be another one. I'm going to say 75-80% chance. So no matter what the news happens to be on this one, how do you not sell it? Because this has got to be the last $1 trillion being thrown at the market, and then I don't see another trillion coming after this, do you?
I don't know if I'd stand pat on with you, because they seem to be, you know, doing it again and again. The Fed seems to have a posture to do what he did. So, stimulus package, you pretty much run the gambit with lowering interest rates. But, I wouldn't put it at that high a probability, with what goes on with the Fed and the government. I'd say it's, pump up the economy at any cost, and inflation's not rearing its ugly head yet in the numbers that they follow. I know we have different numbers and different different indicators on that, but I mean it's the Fed pump forever. I think I'd be on the other side of that trade of you.
Really? Let's turn the question around. The first $3 trillion basically damn near doubled the market. The next trillion and a half, maybe it'll going to hold it steady or go up a little bit. I mean, we seem to be running out of, put it this way, every trillion now seems to be getting us a little less. Is that a fair statement?
Yep. Well, it takes a while for the stimulus to work through, but.
True.
I mean, in the doubling with the first stimulus, look at the level that it came from. So,
right.
A little bit of apples and oranges there, but go ahead.
All right, we got to let you go, except for one thing. The guys that are starting to play football on November 1st, they're going to go right into the playoff, too, with the guys been playing all year? How weird is that?
Yeah, still trying to figure out, but, so far here, Michigan has not been undefeated this late in the season in a while, so I'm taking the undefeated status.
When's their first game?
I believe it's third week in October at Minnesota. That's going to be a tough game, but... Next time we're on, I do have a little bit of optimism about our quarterback.
Cool.
Finally got a potential stud in there. So we could talk about that next week.
Well, the Pac-10 starting what, November 1st, maybe?
Yeah, they're a week after the Big
Ten. All right, Joel, take care of yourself, buddy.
Go Blue.
SP Futures up 1, NASDAQ Futures down 21. We've been flat all morning. Come back, Mr. Kenny Polcari.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
I like the way sparkling earrings lay against your skin so brown.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Matt Weber. We have Mr. Kenny Polcari. S&P futures up 175. NASDAQ futures down 26. Quiet morning so far. We'll see. Because yesterday was a huge rally after a big sell-off on Friday with Trump in the hospital, Trump back out. So here we are, and it's a very odd world. We have stimulus coming. Now they're talking about another $1,200. We don't know when. We don't know. I guess we're going to get all the money from the Fed, even though the last few weeks the money supply and stuff has actually calmed down some. So they're in kind of a holding pattern. We'll see if that kicks all back up again. Kenny, what do you think? What are you solving the world with, buddy?
I'm just trying to sort through everything that's gone on in the last, 5 days, starting from Friday morning through the weekend. Yesterday's reaction in the market certainly made some sense. The biotechs, for sure, made sense after, what you saw happening over the weekend. So that surge up in biotechs, certainly nobody should question. I think that'll probably back off just a little bit. But look, biotechs are going to continue to make news as we continue to move through this virus, especially now that winter's coming and cases are rising around the world. So there'll certainly be continued focus on the biotech. So I don't think they're going away anywhere soon. I do though think yesterday's reaction was certainly, all very dramatic and all very designed around showing everybody that, he's alive and well. He's certainly not in the hospital bed. He's walking under his own power. He's not being assisted by anybody. He's, marching across the lawns and marching up to the balcony and saluting everyone and then telling everyone, be not afraid, as he must have been reading the Bible for the 4 days as it appears in numerous places in the Bible. But that was all yesterday's pomp and circumstance. I think there's going to be a lot of discussion, although it's not going to price stocks in the long term for sure. But it will have the ability to create chaos in the short term, which is, great for the day traders and hopefully provide opportunity for the long-term investor. But there's going to be a lot of talk about, his complete lack of compassion or understanding about the 200,000 plus lives that were lost who could not get the treatment that, naturally as president he got. And so therefore his comment yesterday about, don't let it dominate your life, falls on deaf ears and just and just sends another message that, you know, he's kind of out of touch with this, which I don't think is going to help him. I think the market's now expecting that, you know, Biden's lead is going to continue, and that they'll be decisive enough on November 4th that it'll be uncontestable. And so I think the market likes that, because the market just likes clarity, right? It doesn't necessarily say it likes Biden. It likes the fact that there's clarity, and that if Biden becomes president, the market will readjust. It will reprice based on what that means, but it won't be so volatile, right? It'll move in one direction to the other until it reprices based on, you know, what it thinks. Okay, so I think that's what happened yesterday. I think today, you know, you see markets around the world churning. Certainly Asian markets were up, but that was a reaction to our surge. But European markets aren't doing much right now, and U.S. futures are actually flat. They're off just a tiny bit as you know, we start this whole conversation about Nancy Pelosi and Steve Mnuchin again. I mean, look, if she makes a deal, it's viewed as positive for Trump. If she doesn't make a deal, then Trump's going to turn around and, you know, shove it right in the face that it was the Democrats that refused to come to the table. So, you know, she's in a tough spot. How is she going to manage this? How is she going to come out the winner? And how are the Democrats going to come out to be the winner? And I think that's what you're going to see over the next, you know, I don't think you're going to get an announcement today. You know, they keep teasing everyone. Oh, they're meeting again. You know what? I think it's baloney that they're meeting again. They know what they have to do. They're not doing it. I think it's all very political. Shame on them. But I think that's what's going to happen. So you're going to get this continued volatility.
I would wager, if I could ever get the answer, $1 to you and Mr. Weber, that the discussions have to do with the stimulus. It has to do with some off-the-wall thing on there regarding mail-in votes or something that's stuck on the bill that we don't even know is there.
I agree. I don't think it's so much a stimulus at all. I think it's got something very political. But you know, we're not going to know about that at the moment. And, I think it's shameful that, you know, on Friday when he was taken to the hospital, or when he became sick, her first reaction was to stand up and go, oh, we need to come together because now the story has changed. We need to get this stimulus package done. And then she kept everybody, because she's the one who said it, kept everybody on the edge of their seat all weekend and all day yesterday. And then again, last day, they failed to come to an agreement, and they're going back to the table again today. You know what? I, along like with so many other Americans, are disgusted with this process by now. Just disgusted. But I would agree with you. I think that conversation has got more to do with something other than stimulus, whether it's the post office, the mail-in ballot, how we're counting them, or you know, but something other than the stimulus.
Do you think the four creatures that are in charge out there have any idea of the level of disdain the rest of the economy, the rest of the people hold them in? Or don't they care?
I hope they do. I can't imagine that they don't. It's like I can't imagine why nobody sees, you know, the protests that turn violent. It's like they don't really exist because no one's really talking about them. But I can't imagine that they don't understand the disdain, because I do think it's building. And I think it's getting louder and louder. I mean, did you see that woman, every time she gets on, I think she's great. The Sarah Nelson, the woman who represents, she's the president of the Flight Attendants Association. She was on, CNBC yesterday, you know, having an argument with Sorkin about the airline industry and about all the jobs that are going to be lost and all, you know, blah, 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 and how it is. The airline industry is very much a part of the U.S. economy.
Well, sure.
For sure. And how disgusted, you could hear her voice, how disgusted she is over this political back and forth between Pelosi and Mnuchin. And I think the country's getting very, very disgusted.
Well, but I mean, so we could talk about that for a half hour. I mean, we're talking about companies that did nothing but buy stock for 8 years now.
Agreed.
But here's what I want to ask you, Ken. I want to push back a little bit on the Trump thing. I mean, at the risk of 100 other tweets coming today that I'm now becoming a Trump guy, which I'm not. God, every time I say something even remotely, everybody gets to do something right in a day, even him. You know, I mean, he may do 100 things wrong, but there's been a, you know, as you know, I get all, you probably do too, I'm a central clearinghouse of COVID stuff. And the weird part is that there was I got a study from an Italian doctor. It had to be in June right when the people start talking about the mutation.
Yeah.
And his point was that the mutation, whatever, the one thing became stickier or something, the one spike on the, that he thought it made it more contagious, but less deadly. Because he was seeing more cases in his area, but nobody was dying. And very, very few hospitalizations.
Right.
And, it wasn't until like 3 weeks ago I read something like that here at the Center of Disease Control. And the idea, I mean, when you go through the, I went through the numbers in Illinois last week. I have 85,000 people dead, 40,000 are in nursing homes. Ohio is 75% at one point. I mean, we continue, I think even though Trump got, you know, better care than most, I'm going to say the fact is the dude's 74, overweight, arrogant, and probably has other health issues, and he's fine. So the, you know, I mean, I mean, so the point is, it's not March. You know,
no, correct. It is not. We've learned a lot. The country and the medical community and scientists have learned a lot. I will say over the last 6 months. But the fact is, be honest, he's also the president of the United States.
I get it.
He got every benefit afforded to him, as he should, because he's right.
Well, he did a lot better than nursing home people in March.
Of course he did.
Yeah.
Of course he did. And you're right, he is overweight, and he is 74, so the risk did go up. He is male, the risk did go up. I get all that. But you can't deny the fact that, you know, naturally he got every benefit thrown at him, as he should have.
I'm not denying it. All I'm saying is we're closer and closer to the day that if we don't get a vaccine that really works, we're just going to say, everybody, this thing's, we can't stop it. It's a common cold. We're getting closer to that day.
Yeah, no, I agree that we are getting closer to that, because I do think the therapeutics have absolutely gotten better. I think that, because look, you can see it, we're not having, hospital emergency rooms and ICU units are far from being overwhelmed,
right.
And they're far from being, you know, the way that we saw back in March, right?
Right.
When it first happened. And I think, and the more people you talk to, you know, I've spoken to a lot of people that have since gotten diagnosed, but who say to me, like what I had.
Okay, real
quick. Know, I had it, but it wasn't, it didn't knock me out. I was lucky, but it did, you know, listen, it knocked me on my feet,
Kenny,
for a good 12 days.
Kenny, you're a stud cake. Let's be honest. Hey, I got a quick question
for
you.
But you know, I'm 60, I'm in that range, right? I'm not 70, but, you know, I'm not 30 either.
You're not 70 yet.
No, not yet.
Hey, a quick question. What are you doing with this volatility, the implied volatility that is racing up through December? What are you doing to protect people? I'm having trouble. I mean, I don't want to pay that much.
No, I agree. But I think what's going to happen, and I think you're going to start to see that, I think that's going to come in, because I think the market's going to now assume, or the market's going to start to price in, that we're not going to be volatile through December, that the election is probably going to be more decisive and so therefore uncontestable, because it'll be that much of a win. I think that's what you're starting to see, and I think that's what that was part of yesterday's move. So I think you're going to see volatility going out through December. Pricing is going to start to come in, because I think that's going to start to fade.
Well, I think you're right, but boy, I'm not. First of all, I don't for my clients. I'm not into just selling puts in December, hoping things work out all right. But the numbers are getting up there. They really are getting up there.
No, I hear you. I think though that you know, like everything, I think it's an overreaction. I think you're going to start to see those come down, and I think you're going to start to see them come down over the next.
You think they're going to come down before the election? Well, cool. That would be nice. That would solve all my problems, actually.
Yeah, I think it's going to, because I think as we move through, and a lot's going to be dependent to really tomorrow night's debate. I think is going to be keenly watched, especially after what happened last Tuesday, and especially, you know, what just happened to Trump. You know, the concerns over Biden's age and ultimate health. Right? I think there's a real sense in this country that you know, Biden might be very healthy now, but 4 years is a long time. And on one hand, 4 years is a long time, and so there's a real possibility that Harris does become president. I think it's going to be keenly watched.
I'm assuming
I do think that they're actually going to have a debate that I think tomorrow night's debate is going to be very well done. I don't think it's going to be what we saw last Tuesday at all.
I'm assuming
I don't
Harris,
think they're going to be talking over each other. I think they're going to talk about policy. At least I hope they do.
I'm assuming Harris is the president. And I have a problem with
agreed.
That.
Agreed. And I think that's exactly why I think the market's assuming Biden's going to win, and then ultimately Harris is going to be president, which is, you know, that's going to cause, listen, that'll cause a whole nother set of issues. But if it's clear and that's what it is, the market will reprice based on that. It will. You and I both know that. It will reprice in one direction, at least until it finds,
well, the market reprice,
until it finds its cheap.
The market repriced in Weimar, Germany. It didn't help us out.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kenny, take care of yourself, buddy. Talk at you next week.
All right, I'll talk to you.
SP Futures, unchanged. Wow. And Lansdale Futures down 37. Come back, Mr. Mike Hart.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Lower market based action jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Weber on the board. SP futures up 50 cents, been right at the flat line all morning. NASDAQ down 31, was up 2 something yesterday, so it's a minor pullback. And we have the Dow is up 88. Individual stocks in the Dow that are up, we've got, Chevron. Wow. Well, it's actually up a little bit today, but still not $40. Dow up $1.92. We've got Goldman Sachs up $1.21. We got Home Depot up 168. So some of the stocks are moving a little bit, but nothing really major. Mike, how are you, bud?
Hey, doing fantastic. How are you doing, Chief?
We're doing good. We talked yesterday, but we brought up a whole bunch of things that you look at that we were saying, hey, we better explain some of that stuff, Lucy. And we just had Kenny, I don't know if you're listening, but Kenny's convinced that there's enough certainty in the election now getting there that he thinks that this volatility we were talking about yesterday, implied volatility in the November, December, and really as far out to January months, will start to actually come in before the election. Are you a buyer of that?
Well, you know, when I look at the volatility, I'll type in VIX on my platform, and this is pretty universal for whatever platform you're using, and you're going to have a volatility number associated with each month. And each month has its own expiration cycle, of course. So the way you can tell month to month is on most platforms, it'll give you a monthly volatility number for that expiration cycle. And what happens right now is we have the most volatility in November. No surprise. That's right before the election. I'm sure I'm doing a reading of about 105% for VIX. That's very, very high for November. October is 98. So we go from 98 to 105, down to 99 in December, and then it slowly starts falling off after December into January, February. So what I'm seeing and the way I'm reading this is there is a binary event or, an event that's going to go one way or the other, and it's got a lot of volatility associated with it. Now, I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if we saw volatility continue to rise going into this. I don't see this being a settled event, and I don't see it being as clean as maybe the market's even predicting, where everything's going to be cleaned up by December and volatility is going to drop. I wouldn't be surprised, and I think this is what Kenny was referring to, is if volatility really picks up in those months after November.
Well, the yin and the yang here, and we try and get into the detail with Mike because he knows this stuff so well. And if we might be over the head of a few of the listeners, but you know what? If you're trading some of these stacks that are high flyers, this better not be over your head because you're winging big dough around. Let's put it that way. You're the deep end of the pool or the big end of the poker table, one or the other you want to call. The individual months. Now, when you say you look at the VIX calculation, now is that the implied volatility for that particular option, or is it the VIX calculation, which is the month and all the months in front of it for that month?
It's the monthly expiration. So I'm looking at basically that option chain, and what it's going to do is take a collection of those options and give you a relative. Most of the options are going to be nearer to at the money options.
Okay.
So, higher delta options, and that's going to give you an approximation of the overall volatility affecting that month, not the individual strike. There actually is another volatility calculation for the individual strike. We don't spend much, if any, time looking at the individual strike volatility. The bigger option firms who are doing things that are nothing that we'd ever do, like volatility scalping or gamma scalping. Only the big boys do that, and it's really nothing that we would need to worry about is those individual strike volatilities. But the monthly strike is helpful in forming our assumption. Can we trade off of it? Not really, but it gives us a good indication of what the market's thinking, at least.
Well, you know, what's interesting is an observation anyway, is it seemed when I was looking at my, I'm trying to find a place to buy here, protection for my people. Right now I'm October 30th, and I got to get out from there at some point, but the stuff's pretty darn high. Now, there's almost no skew. It's so darn high that it's just high across the board. The skew has almost disappeared.
It's very unusual.
Yeah.
And we've been seeing that on and off throughout the year where typically you have puts trading at a rate of almost about two times what calls trade at. And what we're seeing is calls are really catching up to puts. There's still a little skew on the put side, but calls have caught up quite a bit to almost equal credit on each side. And that is, what does that mean? Well, it just means that market's placing risk on both sides right now. And there isn't really, look at it as buying insurance. And people typically buy insurance to the downside because, they're losing money as things go down. It's typically how things are placed. But right now you have the market or participants also placing risk on the upside, buying insurance in case it goes higher. So you can look at it as there's a lot of people who are short and there's a lot of people who are long. And the market's becoming more and more two-sided, where the bets are being placed pretty heavily on both sides.
Well, you also have what you noticed. This really started. Well, I can tell you exactly when it started. It started in 1987, when clearing firms started looking at like total risk and 30% moves and that standard deviation.
Right. There wasn't skew from what I'm. From what I know is there wasn't really skew to speak of prior to 1987.
No, well, the reason was because even a market maker, Well, for a while I had a small account, then I had a pretty decent size account. Not huge, but I mean, you could, even if you had, you know, 50 grand in your account, you could have a, say the OEX was trading at 280, you could buy 100 of the 240 puts at an eighth or a quarter and sell, you know, 200 of the 10 below at 3/16ths and get a 16th credit. And actually, if the thing went down a bunch, you'd make a bunch of money. But then, of course, it went down 30% in one day, and everybody said, no, you can't do that anymore. So what you'll see is you, normally when you run down on your put chain, every strike down, the implied volatility will sneak up a tenth of a percent or two. And then a lot of firms that are you know, big swinging whatevers, they'll play that skew, and they'll say, okay, the skew's coming in. Right now, they would be big sellers of the near term and buying the outs because they think it should go the other way. Or buying the, they'd be selling the at the money and buying the outs because the skew normally has the out of the money's higher volatility wise than at the money. Now it's like almost non-existent, a little bit, Mike, but nothing like you'd expect. It almost looks like a perpetual earnings play. We're in an earnings play of the stock and earnings morning. You'll see a stock at 200. All the straddles, the 200 to 205 to 210 are all the same price. Because everybody thinks it could be anywhere in that range, right? And that's kind of where we're at now, which is really weird.
Exactly. I mean, when you look at skew and you try and determine what the skew is saying, well, you can't exactly, the market's pretty fair in the sense that things are priced the way they're priced based on demand. But, the skew itself, when we look at it and we say, well, what can we pull from this? And you're right, Chief. It really is like an earnings event when you look at skew that's equal on both sides. All of a sudden, you have a market that is the risk isn't exactly what we call normal risk distribution.
Right.
And the distribution of the risk is now placed more or less to the upside and to the downside. And then when you look at the standard deviation or the expected move, what happens is you get a wider expected move and you see a lot more risk placed on the upside.
Well, because we have one of the things we're trying now, not for our regular clients, but for a couple of big guys, is we've been reversing the protected index program and try and take advantage of the skew, which of course is now disappearing the minute we started doing that. But you look at like the Qs, for instance, the Qs are trading 279. They closed last night roughly 280. But you'll see the call spreads. Like if you have an in the money call, say you bought calls against your short Qs, and you've got like a 274 strike, right? It almost doesn't matter what strike you have. The 74.75 is a half a buck. The 75.76, half a buck. The 76.77 might be 49 cents. I mean, they're all exactly the same. It's almost like everybody has almost equal probability that come Friday, the Qs are going to be somewhere within $15 an hour, with like almost no preference as to where it is today, which is really strange.
It's unusual. I mean, it's unusual that you get paid relatively the same. You know, typically the further out of the money you go or the further down you go, you'd expect to see a more of a difference between it or more of a divergence. So, it's unusual. You're absolutely right. It's unusual to move further out of the money on those call strikes and still be collecting, you know, roughly 50 cents as you move down. Of course, the further and further you go, you're going to see that credit change, but
yeah, but you know, you better go real deep to get like 60. You got to go real deep to get 60 or 70. I mean, you better be like $15 deep to get that.
Yeah,
I mean it's the pricing is really strange, but it also, Mike, as I always tell clients, is when you see the price of insurance being high enough to where you don't want to pay it, there's a message there. Right, there's a message that says, you know, it's like, you know, you're not into your midlife crisis yet, but you'll get there. And one of these days, you're going to walk into the chubby man store, and you're going to say, how much for that vet? And the guy's going to go 85, and you go, I can handle that. A guy like you, no problem, write the check. And but you're going to say, how much the insurance? And he's going to go 10 grand a year, and you're going to go, I don't know if I really want to vet if the risk of the darn thing is 10 grand a year, right? So you might say, boy, I love, pick a stock. I love Intel. You know, it's $51. How much are the 51 puts? Well, they're $15. You go, what? You know, it's an education of what the rest of the world thinks the risk in that stock is. And sometimes it's a startling experience for you who might think it has no risk, right?
Right. And the thing is, it's like, I love the analogy of the insurance company because it's really what it's like. And the nice thing about the options market, which we haven't really talked about too often, we have talked about selling options, and you're doing that for some of the bigger accounts that are looking at maybe selling options to finance puts. But you really start acting as an individual trader. You can act like the insurance company in a sense. You can say, okay, I think this insurance is actually selling for too high of a price. So you can, rather than buy, you can absolutely sell. And like you said earlier, you can do it in the form of a spread. So you can act like the insurance company, sell an option, and then you can define the risk or buy protection lower, and you just create a call spread or a put spread. And that is, in a sense, saying, hey, I think this insurance is too high. I'm going to get shorted. I'm going to act like the insurance company and sell the option.
Well, right. It's remember when I used to give a lot of lectures, we had seminars came in, Mike, I always used to use the example of, you know, I fly into Midway Airport. Now, for some reason, my truck is at home. I need to rent a car to get downtown. For whatever stupid reason, I want to rent a car. So I've driven from Midway to downtown, you know, how many hundred times without cracking up, knock on wood. That doesn't mean the next trip's going to be a good one, right? So if somebody were to say, okay, this car you're renting is worth 20 grand. By the way, the insurance for the day is $5. I'd be an absolute moron not to buy, right? For $5. So I mean, what I'm saying is, it's not just when retail people, decide they like a stock, they like Disney, they like Walmart, they like Verizon, whatever stock I'm reading off the Dow here. They really say, well, I like it, and they really don't care. They think it's going to be higher at some point. I guess they care how much they pay for it, but the price of the stock is not so much the educational piece. Now, in options, it's different. So if this thing's $5, and I'm going to say, Boy, I mean, I'm a moron not to buy that because anything can happen, right? Some homeless guy could bump into me and put a dent in it. But then if it's $100, I might say, hey, you know, I made it downtown so many times, I'm not going to give you guys $100 for 2 hours. You know, I may do that. I'm not saying it's the right thing or wrong thing. But if it's $500, I might say, I'm calling up my buddy Mike, and Mike and Jeff and Chief are going to form an insurance company and compete against these guys, right? Because we could do it for $200. So, I mean, that's what options are like. At some point, you want to be buying them, you don't care, and at some point, they're educational pieces, even if you don't want to buy them or sell them, correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, you're referring really to implied volatility, you know. What else ultimately is going to drive that price is maybe the crime level or how many cars actually get damaged downtown, and that you could look at it as the implied volatility. And as more and more cars are typically damaged in the afternoon, you might say, okay, volatility is really rising. I can see why it's so expensive, but maybe I don't want to play in this game altogether, and I'll park up north a little bit and River North, and maybe that's a little safer nowadays.
Well, that's because you're heading right for the bars.
Yep.
Well, what if you say, I don't want the insurance, and you look out the window and you see a sleet storm and you see a big sign that says, streets and sand salt trucks on strike?
Well, and that's, again, that's going to go directly into that implied volatility, and you're going to see a change in the option price or in the insurance price, and that's going to be based on those factors. Same thing with the market. You say we have an election coming up, and you say this, you know, anything could happen, but maybe if this guy or that guy gets elected, here's what's going to happen in the market. All of a sudden, you have players on both sides of this equation, and everyone's buying options. Options are getting more expensive because the uncertainty is increasing. So you have the implied volatility. Ultimately, that's what's rising.
Well, that's right. And as a retail player, Unless you're Soros or somebody, you're probably never going to turn into a seller. I mean, I might have a few guys that if the thing gets out of hand and somebody's got, you know, $800,000 account, we might sell a 5 lot of puts, but that, I mean, we're not becoming sellers, right? That's not what we're doing. I suppose if you had a $50,000 account, we could sell a 1 lot or something if you really wanted to. But that's not what I do for people. And I'll bet I don't have a naked put or call on any of my people and haven't had for, right. for 5 years.
It depends on the makeup of the account.
Right.
Some people allocate X amount to speculative accounts where they might do that, but if you have an account that's long stock and that's your primary driver of profit, then I completely understand how you wouldn't be stepping into something that you own nothing in and decide you're going to be a seller of premium, because it's going kind of against your game if your game is buying assets, holding them, looking for an appreciation and then selling them.
Well, it's very few
only
people.
Thing I'd say you might look to sell is if you're going to be a covered call player in that sense, but you're still covered with the stock, so
correct.
It's not quite naked selling.
Right, so I mean, you'd have to have, there would not be any normal retired person of any stripe. You could sell a cash secured put if somebody just wanted to buy a stock less because they're essentially have all the money there to buy the stock, but we haven't really done too much of that lately either. I mean, a little bit, but that's a horse of a different color. You're not speculating. You're saying, Walmart's 140. I've got 140, but I don't want to pay 140. I'll sell the 100 put, and if I do buy it, I'll buy it at 100. By the way, I got 140 in the account, type of thing. That's a different. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about.
And also, it depends on the account.
Yeah.
If you have a margin account, it's going to be much different than your IRA account
as far
as the rules go with options. And at the end of the day, the IRA account is much more restrictive. And it's a lot harder to trade options. So you might say, I really like the idea of selling a short call and getting short the market and collecting that premium, but the vast majority of brokerages out there, and this is based on a law that is changing or already has changed, but most brokers don't do this, is you can't sell naked short calls in your IRA.
Oh, right, you can't. No way. You can't take unlimited risk.
If you sell a naked put, you're cash securing that 100%. Margin count, you're only putting up 20%. So it depends on the makeup of your the actual type of account. It's going to make a difference on the strategies that you can actually do.
Yeah, you definitely can't sell a naked call. You can sell a cash secured put.
You can sell a cash secured put. My company, we allow naked calls, but we're not the normal.
In an IRA?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
That's out there.
That's cutting new ground.
That is you're swimming in the water. Hope you don't run into a shark there.
Exactly.
So my guys are pretty much, and really most retail people, the decisions are, okay, am I long the stock, which means you're taking all the risk of the stock going wherever. Do I want to protect it? And I look at the price of the insurance. Is the insurance too high, or the insurance is not? The people if you feel like you need the insurance, it's like, it's pretty hard to have a nice car and say, well, the insurance is too high. I'll run with it. I'll just go with it anyway, because the insurance is high for a reason. So right now, it's very difficult for people to be protected. And one thing I did want to mention is you can't just look at the implied volatility number, because if you look at an option that's going to expire this week, okay, you might think the volatility should be 30 and it's 60. But that means instead of the option being 50 cents, it's 80 cents. But it's still only 80 cents, right? But now, if the problem is if you go out to like next March, you think the volatility should be 30 and it's 40, you might say, well, that 40 is a better buy than the 80 this week. Problem is that option now might be $15. So if it goes down to where it should be, you might be going to lose $8, or $7 instead of 30 cents. So the further out you go, you might get better volatility numbers, but you're also pulling them a lot more cash, right?
That's, yeah, so that's how you, yeah. Definitely. And I would say you need to have your time frame in mind. You
right.
know, how much protection you need. Just playing the week to week, it's really tempting. And I get it because, you know, prices are low. You can say, okay, for this much, I can protect for the week. But the way options work is actually risk increases as you get closer to expiration in many ways. And this is called gamma risk. So the amount of gamma risk begins to increase, not linearly, but exponentially. And gamma risk you can look at as if an option moves, you know, a dollar, how much additional risk is that going to give? Now, if you go way, way out on the curve, a dollar move might have very little impact. But when you're at a week away and a dollar move, that could be a huge impact. So that's the gamma risk, and it has a massive effect on those option prices. And, you know, rarely do we go in and do a week-to-week option protection long options unless our time frame is really short. But I hear what you're saying. When you go out, you know, you've got to balance it with, okay, if I go out 270 days, it's going to cost me $15, and I can do this front month here for 50 cents.
Right. And so you're tempted to do the, well, I won't say I got stuck, but I ended up with August, September, I put money to work. I went out to as far as October 30th because it was like right before the election volatility started to shoot up. So I said, okay, I'll go as far as I can where I get a normal price, and then we'll see what happens after that. And now what I'm seeing what happens, I'm not real happy with it. It's getting higher and higher after the election. Maybe today will come down right. A bit with Trump back out of the back at the White House. It might come in a little bit. Kenny is telling me I'm going to be okay, and it's going to come back down. I mean, I'm okay now because I haven't bought them yet. So the idea if the prices come down, that'd be nice. But he's convinced it will. You're saying you're not so sure. I'm not so sure either.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. And you know, the market is telling us the market's not so sure. So you know, at the end of the day, we're kind of going off of what the option world's telling us, and that is, you know, we aren't seeing a huge immediate drop in volatility following this, and it's kind of holding up a little bit. We're seeing that especially in, if you look at SPY and you look at the month-to-month options, you know, you don't really see volatility dropping until March.
No. Like I said, at that point, the options are so darn high. You know, it almost looks like it's sky, you know, it looks like it's up to you at any point. You're paying, you know, you start paying 15-20% of the cost of the underlying for the option. It's a lot.
It's definitely. And I also think, you know, when you talk about direction and you talk about what's going to happen given an outcome, I think it's really hard to say with any statistical, probability of which way it's going to go. That doesn't mean you can't form an assumption and take a shot because that's what it's all about. But at the end of the day, I don't think you can say, given this, then we're going to see a move one way or the other. I think it's still a 50-50 proposition.
All right, we got to go to break. We'll be right back. SP Futures now up 4 and NASDAQ Futures down 21. So we're starting to move to the upside a little bit. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, everyone. Play Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber. We have Mr. Mike Hart with us as well. Now, SP Futures up 7. I'm going to say we're up again today. The Greyhound like chasing the rabbit. Right now, the rabbit is a stimulus package. NASDAQ futures down 17. Dow futures up 142. Like I said, individual stocks in the Dow that are pushing it. Boeing up $1.57. We now have CVX, Chevron up 227. We got Goldman Sachs up 170. So not anything huge, just everything kind of pushing across the way. The only one that's kind of down here is Microsoft down 128. Anyway, that's where that all is. Europe, positive now, a little bit more than it was, obviously. DAX up 79.6%. FTSE up 9, so that's 0.2% rather than flat. CAC around up 31.6, so they're moving up as well. Asia Nikkei up 121.5%. Shanghai still closed. Hang Seng up 212, that's 0.9%. There's a review of yesterday's big rally. We like to review rallies. Dow up 465, that's 1.7%. S&P 500 up 60, 1.8. NASDAQ futures up 257, 2.3. Remember, that was yesterday. Who knows? We could be there today, but right now, that was yesterday. 10-year, 0.79. So these bonds are they're heading south here a little bit the last few days, which means the rate is going up. The bond, minus 0.49. First time it's been under, it's been higher than 0.50 negative. Hard to even say that in a while. Japan positive almost 0.03, 0.026. Got oil rallying up a dollar, over 40, 40.25, so back over that 40 mark. Brent up 102, 42.31. Natural gas up another 8 cents, 2.69. RBOB 122. RBOB was down to like 114 last week, or 112, I think. Gold, we have a little rally out of gold here too, up 2.30, 19.22. Silver down 4 cents, 24.52. Amazing what happens when you pour like $1.5 trillion into the world. Everything, all the other stuff seems like it's going up. But did we really do anything other than degrade the dollar? Well, if you're along this stuff, you're doing well. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have an issue on the outbound Ryan local lanes just before the Chicago Skyway. There's a crash blocking the right lane. Traffic is starting to build. Still not a huge congestion, but downtown to 95th Street is up to 17 minutes and growing. So expect some delays, about 5 or 10 minutes right now in delays if you're heading on the outbound Ryan due to that crash. No issues on the inbound side. I-57 and the Bishop Ford are all clear. Stevenson's been quiet all morning. Same for the Eisenhower.
Edens and Kennedy are looking good. Just a bit of a slowdown as you're heading into the circle on the inbound Kennedy. Only other crash in the area is in the southwestern suburbs. There's a vehicle fire on the right shoulder of I-80 eastbound just before Maple Street with crews on the scene. So you'll have to navigate around that if you're heading eastbound on I-80. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, sunshine early. Could have some showers later on, but a very pleasant, warm fall day, a high of 73. Right now it's crystal clear and 52 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 104 today. Right now it's clear and 71. In sports, it was a Monday Night Football doubleheader last night, and it was the Chiefs beating the Patriots 26-10 in Game 1. That game was closer than the final score would indicate, but Chiefs pulled away late. And then the nightcap was Green Bay all over Atlanta, 30-16. Chief.
Remember this, Maddie. If a man dwells on the past, that's the way markets are, he robs the present. But if a man ignores the past, he may rob the future. The seeds of our destiny are nurtured by the roots of our past. Remember that.
That's very prophetic.
What do you suppose that was?
I don't know who said that.
Master Po, Kung Fu.
Oh, very good.
So, you know, remember that. You know, the seeds of our... You got to keep mindful of the past. I'm going to say that I don't... There has to have been a time that my feeble memory has gotten to me, Mike, but I don't remember anything like this. I mean, the Obama elections and the midterms, we got somewhere like this, but I don't think it ever got quite like this, where we were talking about, you know, maybe not an outcome and that kind of stuff. This is the Obama stuff on roids.
This is unprecedented. There's really no comparison with the uncertainty around this particular election. And then you throw in, the recent, just the recent uncertainty has grown so much that I really don't think there's a comparison in history where we can say, here's what happened last time. You're right, maybe there's some comparison with the Obama election. I had a feeling this was going to, just given the market doesn't have much of a memory, but it has a recent memory, which is often where implied volatility is coming from. So you can say, well, the last election was such a shock of, it was so unexpected, and, you know, really it was a couple of standard deviations away from what was expected, I suppose, but, you know, going into this, you're seeing implied volatility much higher, in a sense, because of the last election being such an uncertain outcome. A little bit of that, I think, is getting pushed into this election. But, man, you look at the world events, you look at current events, I don't think you could ever come close to even predicting that it could ever get this high, and it certainly has.
Well, I would agree, and you know, obviously everybody looks at different stuff, and I keep trying to, I keep wandering off the market, back to the market, and see how things are priced, and look at anecdotal evidence, and then come back and see if people work and not work. And I somewhere in here, I mean, it's really hard for me, Mike, to try and, everybody looks at what they look at, and you look at the world through your own filter and your own eyes, right? And I try and keep mine as few blinkers on as possible, which is hard to do. But it's astounding to me when I hear people all day long talk about how these banks are in absolutely spectacular condition and why aren't they going up? And I'm going, God's sake, a bank is only as good as their customers. How good are their customers doing? Then it comes down to, okay, how many people that we know now, even our customers of other than credit cards, of major banks. I mean, when's the last time you know a plumber or an electrician getting a loan from Citigroup or someplace? I mean, I guess it happens, but if I owned a plumbing company, it wouldn't be my first stop. I don't know. I'd probably go to maybe a credit union, maybe a smaller bank, which we still have in Illinois. I mean, it's hard to really place where the risk is and all this stuff, and it makes me sort of nervous, but I'm not so sure. With our combined economy, where stuff's all—I don't know—that it ever lands in one spot and stays there. It's not like.
Well, you know, if you look at all up in terms of ETFs during, if I'm looking at banks, and you're saying, well, what's the big picture with banks? What's going on? I'll go to the ETF XLF. And that's, it's not going to tell you everything, but it's a collection of the banks. And what I'm seeing when I go to XLF is I'm seeing a market that hasn't changed much. It's not doing great. It's not doing horrible. It's just sitting there. But you do have a lot of implied volatility. So it's, the options are trading expensive, and the stock really hasn't moved since June. That's an interesting story that you don't see often. Usually, if the stock hasn't moved significantly since June, you'd have implied volatility. You have insurance trading really cheap. And it's not trading really cheap. It's not super expensive, but it certainly isn't cheap. So there's uncertainty in the banking sector, where it's going to go. You know, who knows? It's just right now it's just sitting there. So it's interesting that you still have implied volatility. You still have a lot of uncertainty. And remember, the ETF's made up of the big players. So at least you're getting sort of a picture from, you know, a 10,000-foot view picture.
Mike, you mentioned a couple times today and yesterday, it's almost being priced as a binary event. In your opinion, again, this is not looking at your numbers, do you think it is? I mean, I'll give you mine first. You know, disagree, tell me I'm nuts, which is, you know, fine. I don't think it is. I think in terms of plus or minus one or two standard deviations, I think it's a binary event. Plus or minus three or four, I don't. I mean, we've poured three to four trillion into the economy already. It was obvious kind of what that did. And right now, I'm seeing inflation percolating like there's no tomorrow. Everywhere, supply chain problems. I mean, whatever you get, try and buy a bike if you can find one. You know, try and get a part for a washing machine. Good luck with any of that stuff. Try and eat a meal at a restaurant. You know, introduce yourself to the $15 hamburger, right? I mean, it's going by leaps and bounds. But having said that, I think the chance of a 40 or 50% move, and I sure hope we don't get it, is clearly, it would, to my opinion, it would be, if that happened, I sure as hell hope it doesn't, it would be 90% down versus up. I mean, I don't see, after $4 trillion gets us here, another $1.5 trillion is not going to double us again. It seems like we're running into decreasing returns with this to me. So in terms of if there's a package and if there's an upset or something, or maybe Trump does better than people think, could I see the market up 5-10%? Easy. I don't know if I can see it up 40%. And yet, if of all the problems that I see, people getting laid off and airlines start going under, I mean, the theater groups, I think people need to be mindful. I don't know what you do about it, but you need to. There's been a tone change here. I mean, the theater group that closed yesterday is not because of COVID. They closed because there's no movies and no people. The reasons are changing. The people that have reopened in these restaurants and are closing is because they don't have anybody. There's nobody downtown. You could open up downtown down here, and you might as well put a sign on the sidewalk saying anybody coming by, it's
free. But
isn't
that because of COVID?
Well,
you just said it wasn't because of COVID. I mean, isn't that literally what it's because
I'm saying it's not because I misspoke. It's because of the, quote, disease, but it's reached the point where it's not because Lori told you to stay home. It's because people are afraid enough they're not going anyway. Is what
I'm
saying.
There's some truth to that, yeah.
There's a big difference. And, you can change, okay, we're going to change the rules. In other words, you can say the theaters can be open. You can't force people to go. And if there's no movie there and people are sufficiently afraid, the theaters guy's going, okay, now I'm open. Now what? Tanks for nothing. Which I think is where we're at in a lot of these areas.
Well, you know, and you talk about the new normal, or sort of that line's been thrown around so much that you don't really know what it means. But you have, like, the catalyst, of course, being COVID. But then you have these unforeseen fallouts of the supply chain, or the chain that leads to the output. They're breaking throughout the chain. So the whole thing is sort of the new normal. We don't really know what the new normal is without movies being produced, but we know that the chain starts breaking down. The ultimate outcome is no theaters.
Well, I mean, I think if, you know, I guess anybody can criticize. Well, everybody does these days. But I think one of my biggest complaint about our people in charge, the politicians, is they somehow do not have anywhere near the knowledge or respect. I use the term respect more than knowledge for what it takes to have a functioning free economy and the bazillion pieces that go into it. And you can't, it's like, remember, did you ever read the book way back in the day? Well, Arthur Haley wrote Airplane, then he also wrote Wheels, right? Well, and Wheels had to do with all the stuff that was going on in I think it was a Ford assembly plant, this, you know, the assembly line and blah, blah, blah. And how all it took was one wrench dropped in the right spot in the assembly line and the whole place stopped. Right? And I don't think our people, and you know, I don't know, maybe agrees with me or not. I know people, you can't pull bits and pieces. It's almost like a human body. You can't say, all right, we can go without the heart for a day. No, you can't, right? I mean, it percolates together. You can't close the exchanges and expect the self loop to look decent. You can't, right.
It goes back to your point. How I completely agree with you that the risk is actually to the downside, and we're not seeing risk of the market going up 40% because of that very reason. That the chain itself is beginning to break, and you can only throw so much money to support a broken chain before the money isn't going to work, because we know you can't just throw money at a problem forever, because you end up with that $15 hamburger, or you end up with inflation that just can't keep up with wage growth. So you have a population that can't spend on goods and services because too much money's been thrown in the system. You have outrageous inflation going on.
Well, and that inflation could be asset inflation. It could be, what's the Zoom? It could be those kinds of places. That could be where your inflation is this time. That's where it was in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
2000 was totally different than 1978 and 81. It all went in the market.
Right. That being said, you know, you throw another $1.5 trillion. I think the risk now is they don't throw $1.5 trillion. The market's anticipating, this is similar, I think, in 2008 when we had QE1 to QE3 or 4, and we had to keep doing that quantitative easing because the market was demanding it. The market needed it, or we were going to have another 2008 happen, or we're going to have another market decline if that quantitative easing wasn't implemented every 6 or 8 months. So the same thing is going on here, but it's happening on a massive scale. Even, you know, it's making QE seem small when we're throwing $1.5 trillion at a problem and hoping that it solves the problem. And you're right, we can see inflation in many different forms. It's not just going to be the cost of goods and services, but asset inflation. When we look at the stock market, we're seeing assets inflate at an unbelievable rate. You look at a chart of the S&P 500, that's all you have to do.
Right.
Look at a chart of the S&P 500. It's rallying from its lows earlier this year in March, more or less, like you said, 40%. How much higher can we go? The risk, in my opinion, has to be to the downside somewhat, especially here. If you're a trader, I agree, it's a 50-50 proposition, but you also have to look at where we've been and where we are. And the idea of, I always trade as a contrarian, typically.
I'm
selling when everyone's buying, and I'm usually buying when everyone's selling. I don't know if that's a better way or not, but that's usually my way. So when I'm looking at the market here where it's appreciated that much, I think the pot odds tell you that if you're going to play that game, I'm always going to be short up here. It's hard for me to be long and be comfortable.
Is your middle name Gomez? Remember the Adams family? Everybody's buying, then sell.
It's one or the other, but yeah, I hear you.
Well, you know, the thing that makes me nervous about the money part, and it,
everything they guys did in March and April, I really didn't have any issue with it. Matter of fact, for the first time in my life, I might actually congratulate some politicians. But if we put this $1.5 trillion in, say two, round it up, say $2 trillion, and it's going to do something for a while. It's going to pay people because, you know, we've got a flood. The flood washed out the bridge. We're going to make people's life okay on either side of the river. But by the way, in 90 days, that bridge is going to be back up, and people are going to be able to go back and forth. You don't just leave people's lives back together for 90 days, knowing the bridge is going to take you 2 years to repair. It gets you nowhere. So you think if these guys do this stuff for, say, 90 days and start paying people again and so forth, increase the unemployment, maybe there's another PPP to keep those firms alive, small firms alive. If you do that, at the end of the 90 days, you have to be making a commitment that everybody's reopening, no matter what, unless the smallpox shows up. You can't just lob it out there and say, we think 90 days is enough. At the end of 90 days, we're all still shut. What have we done?
We alleviated the situation short period, but if we exit too soon, I agree. Like, you're going to see a market that collapses pretty fast because the market is anticipating this. The market is pricing it in, and it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy where we often see that with interest rates, where the interest rate expectation of a rise or a fall of the Fed has been pretty consistent with market expectations for quite a while. It's pretty rare that we see a surprise out of the Fed. For that reason, is we're trying to look a little bit more forward and say, how long is this problem going to last? I think with the new normal, old normal, we have a while to go. It seems like we have a while to go before this problem's fixed.
Did you see the Matt? You'll hate this. I got an email, of course, with a YouTube homily of some old Catholic priest up in Wisconsin. I bet he's going to hate this. And of course, he got known to all kinds of crap from his diocese and stuff. But he was ranting and raving about, he's tired of people pushing people in a certain direction. Eventually they push back, but they never get back to the line they were before. He goes, if you're going to have people stand 6 feet apart and wear a mask, he goes, maybe you do it because something bizarre came along. Don't ever call it normal. It's not normal for people to stand 6 feet apart and to wear a mask. Say it's temporarily a good idea. Don't ever use the term normal. It's not normal. I mean, and you know what? I'm with that. I mean, if it was a smallpox, we'd all be, God knows what we'd be wearing. We'd look like astronauts walking around, right? But I hope we wouldn't be dumb enough to call it normal.
Agreed. I think when you look at this in its entirety, I think from every aspect of what's going on, 6 feet apart is one of the biggest problems that we have. That is a very, very hard thing to implement and keep things normal. Absolutely. Completely agree. It's a good way to put it.
I have a question. In 2 days now, you've asked, once in a while you've used the term market, once in a while the term economy. When is that going to become interchangeable, where you don't have to specify this is good for the market, for the economy, we're not so sure? Are the two ever going to come together? I mean, they did in 1929. I don't want them coming together like that. Are they going to come together peacefully?
Well, when I say economy, I'm looking a little more long-term, market a little more short-sighted.
Okay.
So, economy, in my view, isn't affected by that short-term gamma risk, really, in the sense that the economy isn't going to fluctuate very much on necessarily the smaller innuendos that go on, whereas the market itself is very much driven by that short-term implied volatility. I feel like the economy, I don't just feel like this, I think mathematically you can say the economy's bigger picture and it takes a lot more to move the economy than it does to move the market on a short period of time. So I think it has everything to do with your time horizon.
So do you think like something like the XLF, if it's showing, you know, not, it's not showing all that much health, but it's not showing, you know, disease either. Is that because it's mostly big banks? Do you think if things start to fall apart a little more, that it's all going to be in the smaller banks, or is it going to work its way up the chain? I don't know that much about banking and how much they're intertwined and stuff on all these loans. I mean, I get the feeling, Mike, that downtown, like your Willis Tower and your 425 and your insurance exchange, I don't think that mortgage is held by one bank anymore. It's probably like a group, a consortium of private capital and banks and stuff. I mean, I couldn't begin to tell you where the risk is. Do you know?
I agree. I mean, I think in 2008, they never really figured out where the risk was. You just knew the risk was everywhere. When I look at big banks, and I think it's still the big banks that are okay. I mean, the banking system's strong in this economy still. And I think you're right. If any pieces are going to break, it's going to be the smaller banks. I always look at banks and where they sit price-wise for the most part as, in a sense, another way of looking at interest rates. So, you know, interest rates being low, not great for banks. You know, if there's any sense of uncertainty in the economy and you say this is going to lead to lower rates because, you know, the market needs a little extra oomph to the upside, it's not great for banks. And that's kind of what we're seeing is, following the downturn in March, you saw banks take a big hit.
Yep.
Because the expectation was, okay, they're going to have to lower rates around this in order to prop up the economy, which is what we saw. And we never saw banks really recover. We saw them come back a little bit, and they're just hanging out. We're in a holding pattern, maybe until after the election.
So are you with us when we say, we want Trubisky?
I hear what you're saying, yeah.
What, Thursday night, we got to go back. I want to come back in life as the Bears' second string quarterback, the most popular man in town. Always.
Regardless, yeah.
Regardless. Anyway, by the way, is that Jeff Hoyer? Did he play for the Bears? The guy who played it for
Brian Hoyer?
Brian Hoyer?
I don't know. This was his seventh team that he started for, so it's very possible he played
for the Bears. I think
he
might have been
somewhere,
here somewhere. Yeah. All right, well, back tomorrow. Stocks, S&P futures up 6. We're trying to trickle to the upside here. NASDAQ futures up 20, down 23, but Dow up quite a bit. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.